Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Dylan, how long have you been seeing Brenda?
Why?
Well, you may not notice it, but she has an extremely negative aura.
What?
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210 edition. Today's episode is Season 2, Episode 10, Necessity is a Mother. And then it just ends. There's no more to that title.
Nope.
Now your host, Tari Ariano, Sarah D. Bunting.
But first,
oh, ads?
Yeah.
You can buy an ad on this very podcast, $50 for a personal ad, $100 for a commercial ad. If you're interested, we could do the creative for you, or you can give it to us, or somewhere in between. Go to previously.tv/ads for more information.
Thank you, Dave. Hello, Sarah.
Hello, Tara and Dave. How are you?
We are very well. And you?
I'm still a little coldy. After watching this episode, I was really feeling headachy and down, and I thought that it was the episode, and it turned out I was getting a cold. Not totally sure the two things aren't related, but anyhow.
Did it make you want to go and soothe your troubled head at the Mind Gym?
Kind of.
Sorry, I was away from my mic. The what?
The Mind Gym. Oh, we'll get there. Don't worry, Dave.
Is this like Sherlock's Mind Palace?
No, okay. It's not.
All right.
No, this is like Lawnmower Man, except without the suits.
God, it's so embarrassing.
Okay.
Oh my God.
I'm looking forward to this.
All right. So before we get to the Mind Gym and everything else that's around the Mind Gym, I guess, let's start with the B plot of this episode, which is Donna's good at stocks. You can tell we're in season two because all of a sudden Donna is sprouting characteristics left and right. And this week, it's that she's in this econ class and she's somehow super duper amazing at picking stocks. And Steve wants to exploit her in clip number two.
Why are we jerking around with make-believe?
What are you talking about?
Let's do it for real.
How real?
Come on, we've all got something stashed. Birthday presents, Christmas.
Crazy, look, my dad lost his shirt in the stock market crash of 87, and I like my shirt. Okay?
Yeah. My mom dated a broker once. My money stays in the bank.
Guys, no guts, no glory. Come on, Donna, show them what you're made out of. Let's take Free Enterprise for a ride.
I don't know.
Donna, you're great at this. If we'd been playing for real, we would have made a bundle off your picks.
Donna, don't be stupid. Steve's right. You hear Mr. Slater? I'm a good at this. I thought it was fantasy land. Well, it doesn't have to be.
Yeah, it does, because you're minors, but okay.
Kelly said a no-no word. You can't call people stupid. This is apparently all it takes for Donna to be convinced that she should take Steve's advice on anything.
She's
but
the highly suggestible type.
She is. So then we see her and Kelly at the bank where she's signing out all of her savings. Kelly is bearish, see what I did there, on this idea. For some reason, Donna takes out all of her money instead of like leaving a token 20 in there. Like, there's no reason to close your bank account just because you're investing your money. I thought you were good at finance, but whatever. And then Kelly has to enumerate that this is money from birthdays, bribes for good grades, and babysitting, which this is the second time that it's been mentioned this season that Donna babysits. Why would that be a thing? There's no reason to think she would need to have a job at all. I don't for a second believe that Donna babysat. But whatever.
Or that she had this little in the account.
Yeah, it's like $1,100 or something. So Kelly is super snotty, calls Donna stupid again, which she should have realized by now is like the fuel to Donna's fire. And then when we next catch up with Donna, Steve is at the Peach Pit gloating about their amazing gains to Nat as if Nat gives a shit in clip three.
3 days ago, we bought some stock and it went up.
It went through the roof. It exploded.
Steve. That's just the paper profits. In order to make some money, we need to sell.
Sell? Sell? Donna, haven't you ever heard of equity? Give yourself some credit. You're a genius, Donna. She may look like a dumb blonde, but she's the Wizard of Wall Street.
You look like a dumb blonde, so I wouldn't be throwing that around, Steve. Next, we catch up with them in their econ class, where their teacher shows how he got this job in clip number 4.
Perhaps you'd like to share this with the rest of us?
I don't think so.
Why not? She's a big expert.
Okay. I just don't think that when someone buys stock, they should get greedy. You make a profit, you get out.
Steve?
Well, what if you get out too soon and miss out on a major jump?
Well, it's like the song says, you gotta know when to hold 'em, know when to fold 'em.
You're teaching an econ class. That's the best you can do with advice on what you're supposed to do with stocks? Jesus Christ.
Yeah. I mean, fast forwarded most of this, I'm not gonna lie, but I did watch that scene and it's like, what?
Yeah.
Life lessons by Kenny Rogers. Donna, she's once, twice, three times a lady, and other lessons.
So after the bell, someone calls Donna stupid yet again, and that leads obviously directly to the end of the storyline that you knew was coming in clip number 5.
Well, that wonderful company you picked for us to invest our life savings in is having a little problem.
What's wrong?
Well, it says that L.A. Sharp Shoe Factory in Korea burned to the ground. We're going to lose everything. Why do I ever listen to you and your stupid ideas?
Well, maybe you should have listened to me.
What's that supposed to mean?
Because I told you we should have sold, but no, you had to go and be greedy, Mr. Big Shot.
So say it. I told you so.
I told you so.
Great. 20/20 hindsight.
Well, it's not exactly hindsight.
What's that mean?
I sold.
You what?
Yeah, yesterday, right after you called me a stupid wimp, right?
You did not.
I did, and I made a lot of money, and I'm not stupid, and don't either of you ever call me stupid again. Thank you.
She flounces off.
Well, I think we ought to get her to pick us another stock. What do you say, Kel?
I'm in.
Wah, wah, story, end of story. Yeah, that was a big waste of everybody's time. And moving on.
You know, there's a Kenny Rogers song
and
called...
And we never see Wall Street again.
Even a fool would let go. Mm. And that's what she... see?
Uh-huh. Islands in the Stream also.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Moving on.
Yeah. Think about it.
Shut up. I'm sick.
Do the A story, Dylan and his mommy.
No.
So we open the episode in a pool hall where Dylan is shooting pool by himself, looking pensive and very posy, like he's posing for a picture of pensiveness. when he returns the balls to the guy, he's obviously, this is how we find out, he's been there a lot. The counter guy says that Dylan's game is getting pretty solid. So, he's going to play pool too much. Back at school, Kelly advises Dylan about how to deal with his mother. Dylan can't handle having her living in with him 24 hours a day. He flounces off his own self, and Brenda talks about how worried she is about him. She still hasn't met Iris. He doesn't want to talk about her later, and finally is squealing into the Walsh driveway with Brenda when he sees that Iris's car is there, and then this is our first chance to meet Iris. Oh my God. Okay, Iris is played by Stephanie Beecham, who previously worked with Jason Priestley on a short-lived show called Sister Kate, where she was a nun and he was an orphan or something.
Oh, okay.
She is...
Was this a Canadian show?
No. It was a real show.
Wow.
It was a mid-season replacement, if I recall correctly. Mm-hmm. She is, as I say in my notes, a new age nightmare Pinko Flake. Everything that we've heard about her since the whole time she's been off screen is completely true. Her hair is a ragged mop with stupid pointless braids in it. When the kids walk in, she and Cindy have just finished rubbing their hands together and then are holding them over the table so they can feel the earth's vibrations or some bullshit. And then Brenda finally gets her chance to meet Iris directly in clip 6.
Dylan, aren't you going to introduce us?
Yeah, Brenda, it's Iris, Brenda.
Hi. Nice to meet you, Brenda. Actually, I already know a lot about you. You're strong-willed, loving, and intensely loyal, aren't you?
Yeah, it's just about right.
But your astrological chart didn't reveal how pretty you are.
Okay.
Okay.
I don't know as much about horoscopes as you do, Sarah. I think you know some. Yes?
Yes. Sarah, you're a crazy person.
No, I didn't say that. Is it appropriate to do someone's chart behind their back? I feel like that's kind of a violation.
Star ethics. Whether
they, like, care about that kind of thing?
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, if you care about it, you're excited that someone went ahead and did it for you.
Yeah.
And if you don't, then you don't care.
Right.
I don't know.
All right. Well, she doesn't care. And during this speech, while Iris is kissing up to Brenda, Dylan rolls his eyes. And please look at the visual aids, because they reuse his eye roll footage twice. And I'm not kidding. I gift them both.
Thank you. I thought it was crazy.
No, one is like a tiny bit longer than the other, but it's definitely exactly the same eye roll. And I can't believe they got away with it.
We get it, Dylan. She's flaky and you're sick of her. Like, mm-hmm. If she's so flaky, just like, I don't know, wear a crystal around your neck to get her off your back and yeah. Let it go. I don't know.
Also, it's called being polite. Like, everyone has to interact with annoying people in their day-to-day lives. Just because you have been parentless this whole time doesn't mean you don't have to suck it up. Except, it turns out, it does mean exactly that, so we will get there. In the meantime, Cindy tries to make Iris look better by pointing out their commonality to Dylan. It does not work in clip number 7.
You know, your mom and I have a lot in common, Dylan.
You do.
Oh, yes, we're children of the 60s.
Where have all the flower children gone?
Gone to power children. Yuppies.
Yeah. Life was a lot simpler when you could still thumb a ride anywhere in the world.
Mom, did you hitchhike?
Well, across campus.
Does Dad know?
Those were the days, huh, Brad? Too bad we missed out on all the fun.
Well, maybe if you weren't such a fucking sulky pill all the time.
Perhaps. Later, everyone is at dinner, and I hesitate to say I'm starting to see Dylan's side of things, because Iris is really, really obnoxious. Let's hear a little bit of that in clip number 8.
Oh, Maui sounds so beautiful. Just tell me when you're ready. I have a treehouse sitting on top of a pineapple mountain. Right, Dylan?
It's paradise.
What I didn't clip from that is that after that, there's like 50 seconds of everybody sitting in uncomfortable silence because Dylan is being such a jerk that now it's making everyone else around him also feel awkward. But then Jim decides to make things even more awkward, not knowing that that's what's about to happen in clip 9.
So, Iris, what did you do for work in Hawaii?
I sold t-shirts on the beach, and I joined an archaeological expedition. But mostly, I just mellowed.
Mellowed?
It's a great place to drop your inhibitions, Jim, you know? Draw a beard, swim naked.
How alternative.
Oh, I wish I had an alternative to thinking about Jim swimming naked, but now it's in my head. Thanks a lot, Iris.
Right now, one, John Ramos is waiting for me to mention.
Please.
I had a roommate in college who, her idea of like a big compliment was calling things like so alternative, which was like, that's not really what the word means, but like in order to like diss something, she'd be like, well, that's not very alternative. Okay, I'm not gonna mention any names, but John knows who I mean.
Was your roommate Frankie from the Real World, and did she also sometimes call things not punk rock?
No. Not that
bad.
I mean, that would have actually been kind of awesome. here's the thing though, she considered Sophie B. Hawkins alternative.
Oh no.
Hope John wasn't driving, because now he's in a tree, just like Brenda.
Oh, my God. So then Iris moves on to talking about what some psychic told her about Dylan when he was born, and Dylan finally can't take it anymore. And then they accidentally point out the schizophrenic nature of this storyline in clip 10.
Remember a couple of weeks ago when we went on that camping trip? You were complaining that she didn't care enough. I mean, which is it, Dylan?
I don't know anymore.
Yeah. Oh my God. And it was at this point that in my notes I was like, Brenda Dillon, supercut. Because she seriously says it like, whenever she's even trying to express concern, it's always like this immediately cunty tone. It's like, look, Dillon.
Well, again, it might be like with Jason Priestley, where he has two modes, and that's just one of her small acting toolbox that she's just kind of like that. So before they can get to the bottom of what Dillon actually wants, Iris comes out, gives Cindy a big hug, respectfully shakes Brenda's hand, which I thought was interesting blocking that she can at least is intuitive enough to tell that Brenda does not want a hug because she don't. After they leave, everyone obviously talks about Iris. Jim thinks she was eccentric. Brenda thinks she's a weirdo. Cindy likes her, fine. Brandon likes her? Don't get it, but I guess that's just someone had to also be on Cindy's side and there was no one else left. Cut to Dillon's house. Wally, fucking Wally.
Wally
would like Iris because he's a goddamn idiot and just as hairy as she is. Moving on. Dillon's house. The exterior is totally different from any that we see in later seasons. Inside is the same. There are pictures. Iris has, I guess, just gotten out of the shower because her hair is in a towel, but she has a million pounds of makeup on her face. She talks about Brenda's negative aura, which we heard up top, calls her such a scorp, which is kind of funny. Dillon is a Libra, apparently, which means that Brenda and Dillon are wrong for each other, but Dillon is not having it and says that talking about Brenda is off limits, and then storms out to, guess where, the pool hall, where his old friend, the counterman, who I guess owns the place because he's always there night or day, gives him a message in clip 11.
Hey, Bobby Falcone been looking for you, man.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. You must be getting pretty good if Falcone wants to play you.
Well, you know.
Hey, can I get you something?
Yeah, whatever you got on tap would be fine.
You got it.
Goes to get his wallet out.
Hey, man, you don't have to flash that fake ID every time you come in here.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, no problem. Hey, you want a shot with that?
Sure, why not?
Sigh. Maybe.
And this is followed by very pointed chugging of his cream soda prop beer that seriously looks like a 13-year-old at his first kegger.
It's true. There's a gif. It's
like if you're not being asked to chug, just drink it.
Right. And if the beer is supposed to be like he's in a downward spiral, like I don't want to minimize anybody's problems with addiction, but like beer? I mean, maybe start with a shot if we're supposed to think this is troublesome. Like, it's just beer. Whatever. I know that if you're an alcoholic, it doesn't matter what you're drinking. I'm just saying. So, Brandon and Andrea are going through some newspaper business when Brenda stomps in to try to talk to them about it. We hear how this ends in clip 12.
Dillon has flipped out. He ditched school again today. That's the third time this week.
Where does he go all day?
I don't know. He won't tell me. He says his mother is driving him crazy.
Brenda, it's his problem.
For the first time in history, Brandon doesn't want to meddle in anyone else's business. I don't know what makes this different, but congratulations, Dillon.
Doesn't last, though.
Sigh. No, it doesn't. But Andrea has a follow-up question in clip 13.
Is his mom really that bad?
No.
Yes. Oh, come on, Brandon. She's a space case.
So she's a little flaky.
A little? Do you know what she's doing today? She took our mother to a mind gym.
A mind gym?
Theme song to a mind gym.
Where they are wearing VR. They're not even goggles. They're like...
No, they're like...
Steve Sanders sunglasses with like a twinkling light on one side.
Yeah, they're like this... They look like sort of more like the sunglasses that you're supposed to wear like after you've had your pupils dilated or something. Like they're so big and stupid. I guess they got special pajamas to wear when they went there because they're in like matching like new age equivalent of scrubs.
Yeah, like getting a facial scrubs.
Yes, totally. With that are all embroidered. Iris is a fucking douche about it, obviously. She like lays back and like does this thing with her hands. There's a gif where you can see it. And then lays them down on her chest. And Cindy's like, okay, and puts the shades on and then goes into her mystical journey. Can someone who lived in Los Angeles at the time please tell us whether mind gyms were really a thing? Because it seems like bullshit. But also, oxygen bars were a thing, so who's to say if they were actually anywhere? I'm sure Los Angeles is where they were. Meanwhile, the Peach Pit, even Nat has noticed that Dylan is kind of off. Bren is really bitchy to him. When she lectures him about his worries and where he went, he snaps at her and then stomps out again, obviously. At the mine gym afterwards, Cindy says she feels like she's floating. The juice girl, by the way, is Valerie Mahaffey, who may be known to you as there's a picture in the visual aids, but she was from the season of Seinfeld. She was the accountant that George dated, who threw all of Jerry's tax papers out the window before going into the crazy house, and was also Eve on Northern Exposure. She's that lady. Gets no lines, so this is obviously very early in her career, I hope. She's basically an extra. But anyway, Iris apparently comes there once or twice a week because I just get so fried, as who wouldn't, having no job and nothing to do but be concerned about Dylan. But she has a serious question for Cindy in clip 14.
Tell me the truth. Do your kids actually talk to you?
Brandon, most of the time I can't shut them up.
No shitsky.
We know, Cindy, we have been watching. Iris says that Dylan must take more after Jack and pokes around for more information on him. Cindy is reserved and polite and respectful of Dylan's privacy, and Iris backs off kind of in clip 15.
I appreciate your friendship. You know, from what I remembered of Beverly Hills, I expected to be treated like a pariah for having walked out on my son.
I'm not judging you, Iris.
I know. Well, let me tell you, it's not what you think. No. I can't erase the past. But maybe I can do something about the future.
Can we
provide some paparazzi?
Yes, thank you. Can we talk about what accent Stephanie Beecham is trying to do? Because she is English, but I don't think that she's playing Iris as English. And yet her weird pronunciation keeps sneaking in.
Yeah, this is this weird, like, British meets Boston Brahmin, yeah. Roosevelt's like, Flatbush. Like, are you advertising a flea circus? What are you doing? Also, just take ownership of it. You took a payoff to leave because he's a fucking annoying bratty kid.
Yeah. Also,
it's pretty much what we think. Enjoy. Also,
I can't imagine she's the only mother in Beverly Hills whose rich husband bought her off to get away from their children. Like, it's Beverly Hills. I'm sure that happens daily. Anyway, speaking of the brat, Dylan is at the pool hall in his gigantic t-shirt. The aforementioned Falcone rolls up. There's some tiresome pool business.
Oh, my God. Poof clown, to yeah. My chagrin, it's not in the dictionary, but when it is, on that glorious occasion, there will be a little woodcut of this gentleman and his very shiny, very floofy poof.
Yeah.
It is amazing.
I gather from the context that he's supposed to be a tough guy, but no. Anyway, back at the Walsh house, Cindy has ordered a bunch of Pakistani takeout on Iris's recommendation, which Brenda is suspicious of, and suspicious of Cindy's open-mindedness in general. Cindy takes Iris aside of the story with Dylan. Brenda complains that Iris has Dylan all wound up, and to prove it, we cut back to Dylan shooting pool. We see that Bobby Falcone is definitely a bad guy because he smokes a cigarette. The pooling, as I have in my notes, goes on forever, and I am not complaining because thank you, montage. Less to recap, basically. Dylan wins all the games and then goes over to Brenda's house. It's the middle of the night. She's in her pajamas. He's blown off.
But she's right next to the front door.
She's realistic. Yeah. He was supposed to come over and study, and obviously he blew her off. She can smell the booze on him. He starts looking for the Walsh liquor, disappointed that Jim doesn't stock scotch, so he helps himself to some bourbon. Brenda tells him not to do it. He does anyway, and then she orders him to leave and is snotty about it. Brandon is upstairs studying when Brenda comes in, and he gets a chance to do what he loves best, be her second dad, in clip 16.
Brandon, that was Dylan downstairs. He was drunk.
Oh, no.
He got into the liquor cabinet, and I threw him out.
And now he's trying to
get. Did I screw up?
No.
Yep.
Yeah. So then Brandon gets to tell her for the first time that all about the tiny liquor bottles on the camping trip. There's a lot of continuity in this episode, actually, other than the total switch of motivation from Dylan. And Brenda is immediately forgiving of that because she just thinks that the drinking is completely Iris's fault. And the next day, Dylan shows up looking a little too mellow because he is drunk again. She can tell when he kisses her. Brandon decides that they're both going to blow off their trig test so that he can get Dylan out of school before he gets in trouble. And once they're gone, Kelly tries to give Brenda the benefit of her wisdom in clip 17.
Brenda, you're making a big mistake. Dylan is going to do what he's going to do, but I can't stand by and let him do it. Brent, he's an alcoholic. I know that, Kelly. Do you know what that means? Look, I love him so much, I can't stand to see him get hurt. I know, it's hard. But just trust me, you have to let him hit bottom. What does that mean, hit bottom? I mean, that sounds so final. Brenda, you just have to have some faith. It wasn't easy watching my mom degrade herself night after night. When she was drunk, I wanted to kill her. When she was sick, it tore my heart out. But I learned that I just had to let her go through it by herself. Because the more I tried to help, the worse it got. You know why? Because I was there. And as long as I was there, she knew she could keep on drinking, and I'd be there to pick up the pieces. Bren, you can love him, but you can't save him.
Kelly's given Brenda a lot to think about. Dave?
I mean, it's good advice, but that's not what we saw.
Right.
It's A. Mm-hmm. B, have you met Brenda?
Dave?
I have an update on Mind Gyms.
Oh, good.
Not really a thing, I think, in the same sense that oxygen bars were a thing. Mm-hmm. But I did find a reference to something that happened in the 90s with them. Most of the hits were from the aughts. There was a book called The Mind Gym, which isn't the same thing.
Right.
Here's a article from newleftreview.org.
Oh, good.
Oh, I was guessing Mother Jones, but okay.
The Price of Affluence, the Political Economy of Japanese Leisure. And they're talking about stress. Corporate Japan has recognized the existence of the problem, it being stress, and devised a battery of high-tech and ingenious solutions to stress, blah, 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 blah. They include special kinds of chewing gum, meditation chambers, and then in brackets, with 100 Psybrain Mind Gym relaxation salons to open across the country in 1990, with womb-like refresh capsules equipped with tape facilities, which allow one to be completely immersed in the environment of murmuring brooks, singing birds, and gently breaking waves. Blah, 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 blah.
Huh.
Yes. So basically sounds like a relaxation center.
All right.
But that's in Japan. I see nothing that seems to indicate that mind gyms were a thing in Beverly Hills.
I'm surprised that anyone on the writing staff actually researched that enough to find out that that could be a funny thing that they could have them do.
Hello. So,
hello. Oh.
Hi. Sorry, I lost you.
Oh. What was the last thing you heard?
We're back.
They include.
Oh. Oh, no.
Mind gyms, not a thing. Don't worry about it. Okay. Moving on.
Hey, look, the Japanese invented nap pods. Mm-hmm. I was with them. Yeah. To a point.
So while Kelly is telling Brenda to back off Dylan, outside, Brandon is getting all up in his grill, literally stopping him from driving drunk and promising to take him anywhere he wants to go. We all know where he wants to go, to the pool hall. Somehow, Bobby Falcone is back. They talk about how much money Dylan won off him yesterday, which was $500.
While Brandon is concerned, chomping his gum.
So hard. Trying to be a big man in the pool hall by chewing his gum more aggressively than anyone else in there.
Like, at least borrow a toothpick from someone. I don't know. Or start smoking. The gum champing is out of hand. There's a gif. Oh, so annoying.
Yeah.
I don't know how this became, like, my details. Noticing that he's doing that, like... I'm packing 11 inches, and you can tell from how hard I'm chewing this trident. But I'm on the beat.
There's also something weird where there's like exposition where Dylan's like, I won $500 off him yesterday. I've already, but Bobby's already won it all back. And then like, where did Brandon drop Dylan off and then come back? Like, hasn't he been sitting there watching this happen? Whatever.
He's also missing the same trig test. He made such a big foofara over Dylan.
Yeah.
Missing / not studying for, like,
stupid.
I don't know.
Anyway, Brandon then gets to be Dylan's dad in clip 18.
Dylan, haven't you had enough of this, man? Been here all day. I can't walk out on this game, Brandon. I'm hot, man. I've never been this. I'm gonna wipe this guy out. What are you talking about? You lost $500 already.
That was his money.
Dylan, you're not making sense. This guy's playing you for a chump, man. How long are you gonna keep this up?
Till I'm numb. Till I forget where I am and why I came here in the first place, all right?
Ugh. Whatever.
Oh my god. Like, really?
Kind of on the nose.
Yeah.
So Iris is over at the Walsh house flipping out to Cindy. And then Brenda comes home and starts a big fucking fight in clip 19.
I think he's drinking, Cindy. Sometimes he doesn't get in till 2-3 in the morning.
Well, now if this has been going on for some time, why are you so worried tonight?
Because last night he didn't come home at all.
At all?
You know, Brenda said everybody was going to the movies. He's probably with them.
Well, then why didn't he call? I don't know how much longer I can take this. This isn't working, Cindy. I don't know how to do this.
But you don't have much choice, do you? I mean, you're his mother.
Well, that's easier said than done.
Sorry, I forgot I put them in two different clips. This is more of like Stephanie Beecham's weird acting choices. Like, what is that querulous delivery? Take it down 50 notches. He's a teenager. You don't know where he is. It's not the... This is really hysterical overreaction, in my opinion.
Well, especially since he basically, from the sound of it, functionally raised himself between the ages of 6 and now.
Right.
So even if he is drinking or off whatever, reading whatever pretentious thing he's reading, like in traffic, yeah. He hasn't managed to die yet, to our everlasting regret. So.
Yeah, every other night of your life, Iris, has been this, not knowing what Dylan is doing, so whatever.
Why don't you take a pineapple? The sun don't shine. Yeah, I mean, generally, I like her and don't like whoever is sort of like Dylan's adversary, I tend to be on their side, but mm-hmm. This is like, whatever. I mean, and then that his motivation is like, she's, you know, she's making him claustrophobic, but then his real issue is that she didn't pay enough attention to him.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Agree. So this,
let's get to the part where Brenda's a giant bitch.
Yes. So this is where Brenda comes home and is a giant bitch. Clip 19. Sorry, clip 20.
I think he's drinking.
Has Dylan been drinking?
Yes. But Brandon made sure he didn't drive.
Well, maybe he should have made sure he didn't drink.
Where do you get off criticizing Brandon? You know, he has been there for Dylan whenever Dylan needed him, which is a lot more than I can say for you.
Brenda.
Sorry, Mom, it is true. Why else do you think Dylan's falling apart?
Brandon is with him?
Yes.
Okay, if he's with Brandon, then he's fine.
Nope.
Yeah, no. Because, no. First of all, how Brandon has regained the reputation for being the responsible one in any situation, despite all the evidence to the contrary, is really annoying still.
Yeah, like, let's review. Drove drunk.
Yep. Totaled
bought
car.
Bought a lemon.
Yep.
Didn't get a warranty.
Mm-hmm.
Almost fell off a mountain and needed the scrawn to save him, even though there was a ledge 4 inches below his stunt double's feet.
Also lost a shoe.
Yeah, you gotta take care of your shoes, man. That's like rule number one.
Anyway, back at the pool hall, proving Cindy wrong, Bobby Falcone has won back all of his money and then some, refuses to give Dylan a chance to get even. Dylan doesn't move to get any money out to pay him, sneers at him, even though he has no money to give him. Bobby Falcone's giant friends close in. Brandon tries to intervene by saying that Dylan is good for it, but it doesn't help. They end up out in the alley with Dylan getting the shit kicked out of him. Goons are holding back Brandon as if he would do anything if he were able to get away from him. A, B, as if it takes two to hold him back.
Well, and his blocking is like one of those kittens you see at adoption day. He's like, boyer, 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 and like fluffing up his teeny little tail. Like,
yeah. So,
I apologize to kittens.
So, yeah, it's embarrassing for everybody. Dylan is told to, he has to bring the cash back tomorrow. The goons move out. Brandon is left in impotent rage. There's a really weird shot where Falcone leans into to Dylan's face after he's been having the shit kicked out of him and like rubs the blood away from his mouth in a weirdly sexual way. It's very strange. Dylan looks like a vampire. Everyone is embarrassing themselves as usual. Cut to the Walsh living room where everyone is waiting anxiously. Brandon brings Dylan home. Everyone starts yelling because it's like 1 a.m. Dylan is mad that Iris is there. Like, what else did he think was going to happen? And when Brandon tries to cover for him, Dylan just is like, whatever, and comes clean, emerges from the shadows to show off his terrible gray beat up makeup. And anyway, things end in clip 21.
I lost some money.
How much?
$800.
Look, I can't handle this.
So you never could handle anything, could you?
Don't you speak to me like that. I do not deserve to be spoken to in that way.
Well, how should I speak to you? With respect? You're like someone who walked out of me when I was 6 years old.
I'm sorry. Would you excuse us for a minute? I need to talk to my son.
So everyone leaves. Go to the kitchen to talk about Dylan and Iris behind their back, basically. They all agree there's only so much any of them can do to solve this problem. You know, Dylan has a mother now, the parents point out, so it's not really Brenda's problem to take care of him. But then Jim says, until Dylan has a grip on his life, Brenda can't see him. And Brenda agrees, weirdly. Whatever. Back in the living room, Iris is completely ridiculous with Dylan, and I gift a shot of her like flapping her arms and then sinking to her knees in front of him. Like, she's so melodramatic, it's crazy. She's very hurt, of course. He basically restates what he already said, that, you know, he doesn't need her. She gave up on her chance to be a mother to him, blah, blah, blah. After he leaves, Cindy talks to Iris, and Cindy tries to tell her again that, you know, she has to just accept that she's his mother and stop fucking around. And, it, you know, he may never forgive her, but that doesn't stop Iris from being his mother, blah, blah, blah. Iris thinks that Dylan is right and that she doesn't deserve to be in his life. And then Brenda has to tell Dylan that he needs to get his shit together or they can't date. Dylan doesn't even blame Jim. She doesn't want to lose him, blah, blah. Let's wrap Dylan. It up. Dylan! He nice. Promises he'll be all right. Then the next day, Iris is reading in the living room and Dylan gets up. It's noon. She made him breakfast, although we don't know when that actually happened, so it's probably stone cold, but whatever. He sits down, starts eating it anyway.
I would also like to add, this is the best styling on anyone for months. She's wearing like a very plain white tank top and 501s, and she looks great.
She does look great. And a cute necklace, too.
Yeah.
So he apologizes for the night before. He was out of it, but she says that he was right. And this is where things really go off the rails, in my opinion, in clip 22.
Dylan, the things you said last night.
I'm sorry. I was just a little out of it.
But you were right. I thought I could come here, that I could make up for all those lost years. I can't.
So where does that leave us?
Dylan, I'm here for you, but you don't need a full-time mom any more than I know how to be one. You've been on your own for a while, and from what Cindy Walsh tells me, you take pretty good care of yourself. Well, that's when you don't have a mother around to throw a wrench in the works.
Maybe I didn't give you a chance.
No. But the best thing that I can do for you is to give you your freedom. I'm going to go back to Hawaii.
What?
I know that some people may say that I'm copping out, that things got a little rough and I split, but...
Man.
The truth is, Dylan, I wasn't there for you 11 years ago when you really needed me, so... I'm not going to pretend to be here for you now when you don't.
I have a question.
Yeah.
How old is this person?
How old is she?
Yeah.
Like the character? She's probably supposed to be around Cindy's age, so in her mid or late 40s.
Sounds like she's 82.
Well, I finally figured it out. It's totally late Katharine Hepburn.
Yeah. After... Let me talk to my son. All right. So here's my problem with what ends up happening is that she says, as we were discussing earlier, Jack gave her a bunch of money to go away and she took it. She's embarrassed, but she never touched it. And now she's giving it all to Dylan, which is fine.
Put it in a trust, which Jim is going to mind for him, which is convenient plot, you know, generation for the future. But.
Of course. But I feel like this is sort of where we really get into like the change from the show of in the show from being, you know, a different PSA every week to being pure soap, because this is a really bad message to send to kids. I mean, obviously, most of the kids who are watching this are never going to be in a position to essentially be emancipated minors and to, you know, drive their parent away just by being such an asshole that they don't want to be around them anymore. But this is not the answer to their situation. Like, if Dylan is bucking against her discipline or, you know, she's not good at doing it, like, the answer is not to just be like, well, I guess you were such an asshole that you get your way. Like, this is really, really extra, even more irresponsible than anything else she's done to this point, in my opinion.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I guess what I don't understand is, like, if you're going to take a payout to leave, take it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what is the point if you sort of swan back in and you're like, oh, P.S., I kept this money.
Yeah.
So just so you know, I didn't actually take the money to leave and, like, spend it, because obviously she didn't. She lives in a treehouse.
Right.
Not that I know how much treehouses cost, whatever. maybe a lot. There's a whole show on Animal Planet. Anyway. But then to show up, like, years later when it's, like, not even relevant anymore and be like, well, actually, I did love you all along because I saved up all this money?
Yeah.
And also, until she, like, showed up because his dad was in jail or whatever the hell, like, he literally never mentioned her, I don't think.
So right.
For him to be, for Luke Perry to be, like, trying insanely hard to look like he's crying over the pound of gray punched in the face makeup that he's wearing is like, the whole thing is just extremely bizarre. I mean, on the other hand, like, Dylan consistently acts like such a twunt to various people and then is rewarded for it.
Yeah.
Like, usually. So.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, like, and part of the, the problem is highlighted again in the scene where it's like, he has been pushing her away the entire time she's been there. Until the point where she's like, well, I guess I'll go. And then he's like, no, wait. Like, what are we supposed to think he actually wants to happen?
Yeah, exactly. And he's like, the writing doesn't know. His acting can't paper it over.
Yep.
It's not convenient for the show for him to have parents.
Yes.
So, yeah, I mean, it's, I think they just didn't think it through. And this was like a second draft and they just shot it, and then there's all the drinking and Bobby Falcone and who knows. But yeah, I totally agree with you that this is a terrible message, that she's just like, you know, you're right, you're too difficult to deal with,
so I'm just gonna nod.
And that I think we're supposed to think that Cindy is really naive about the situation, that she's like, yeah, it's difficult, they're teenagers, fucking get over it.
Yeah.
Or why'd you come back here? Like,
right.
Good question.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you that, like, it's not that I want more of her around, she's so shitty, but she's also just like, this is in my opinion not what you do when your teenager is being so difficult that you're mad at them all the time. Like, if you are a parent, you just have to deal with it, but whatever.
Well, and to be hurt instead of, like, annoyed by him keeping whatever hours, like, if you're going to change the rules and enforce them and start calling BHPD on his ass.
Yeah, totally. But
or
of course,
pool
like
hall PD, whatever.
But that's my point. This is not supposed to be a realistic depiction of, you know, how parents and children are supposed to interact in the teenage
years.
Yeah, we're
just like, supposed to get rid of Iris and give Dylan a whole bunch of money and no bedtime. So,
which, you know, I'm fine with that. Like that part, that's the soapy part of it. That's like the wish fulfillment fantasy of like, what would it be like if I didn't have to worry about money and I had a really cool car and no one had to tell me what time to go to bed? Yeah, all of that.
Yeah,
is.
And that this is the only time that Pratt has ever been beaten up.
Seriously. All right, let's wrap it up. That's enough of that. So he takes the money, even though he kind of doesn't want to, but of course he does. And then, you know, he cries, sort of. And she hopes that maybe whenever she comes back in a season and a half, he'll want to call her mom instead of Iris. And then on her way to the airport, Dylan brings her by the Walshes so that she can say goodbye. Brenda comes downstairs looking bitchy, even though she hasn't gotten into any trouble for talking like a shithead to an adult that we've seen. Iris asks Cindy to take care of Dylan, or continue to take care of Dylan, as the case may be. And Brenda finally manages to apologize. And then she and Iris have this exchange in our final clip.
I know it must take a lot of courage to do what you're doing.
He's not an easy guy to love, is he?
No. But we sure do, don't we?
Yes. We sure do.
Miss Hardell.
I love him enough that I'm leaving and I won't see you again until he graduates high school. Bye. So it's not a we never see her again. We do see her at least one more time that I can recall.
And then she and Brenda are BFF.
Yep.
Because Dylan's cheating on her with Kelly?
No, by this time he and Kelly are already dating. But yeah, okay. But because Kelly has to hate her, Brenda has to like her, because that's what happens in that season of the show, whatever. So then Brandon comes over to see how Dylan is. He can't believe that she's leaving. He doesn't want to be alone again. And then he is basically an emancipated minor, and then Brandon's like, well, after the airport, we need somewhere there's somewhere we need to go. And he's like, yeah, I know, I have to go give Falcone his money. And Brandon's like, no, not that. It's an AA meeting because Dylan fell off the wagon. And he gets to do his face of shame, and Brandon gets to do his face of triumph, and it's very barfy. And that's the end of the episode.
Yeah, and Brandon, just leave. Like, drop him off and leave.
Yeah. You know, I feel like you're not supposed to hang around at an AA meeting if you're not actually participating. Is that not the case?
It depends.
Okay.
If it's someone's anniversary and they're getting a certain chip. I mean, you're always allowed to be there. They're open meetings. That's
right.
The kind of the point of it. But if you're just like you're just there to watch, or like make sure someone goes.
AA looky lose.
If you're there to Brandon, I assume it's frowned upon.
Yeah, I mean, you know, with respect for all that it has accomplished for many millions of people, if you're not participating, it's not the most exciting thing. There's actually a lot of steps, and they read them all, and, you know, you can't drink. It's bullshit. I'm so sorry.
All right, let's wrap it up.
Shut Sarah, up, I'm sick.
Who is your choice for most valuable player of this episode?
Oh, gosh. Honorable mention to Kelly. Does make some good points, even if they're somewhat internally inconsistent with the show. But Falcone. He does what he promises he's going to do. Mm-hmm. He doesn't let anyone slide on gambling debts. And both, you know, if I had one criticism, it would be that he didn't have his hench folk beat Brandon up also just on GPs, because
you know that's exactly what I was about to say. So yes, I agree. Least valuable player. I mean, Dylan is a shithead, but I have to say, in keeping with my lifelong hatred of hippies, Iris.
In keeping with my almost lifelong hatred of Dylan. Yeah, this is a tough one. Mm-hmm. I feel like maybe Brandon, because it's Brandon.
Always a safe bet.
It's always a safe bet. Other than the moment, especially the moment where he's like, Brenda, it's his problem. Like, oh, now you're checking out? Whatever, dude.
Yeah, until I can interfere, it's his problem.
Right.
But the next time, I'll make it my problem.
Oh, God, fucking Brandon. All right, and this is going to be a blockbuster, the Kim Challenge.
Bad, and dangerous to me.
Five or more reasons from this episode that Dylan proves he is mad, bad, and dangerous to know, starting with, he uses a fake ID and buys liquor with it, and then he drinks it.
And then he drives.
He shows up to school drunk, which is bad, especially on the day that he has a trig test. He steals booze from the Walsh house.
Gets his ass beat up for not paying his gambling debts, which, like, just go to a fucking ATM, you tool.
Yeah, it was the 90s. It's not like 1975 where you had to wait for the bank to open again the next day. He doesn't do a good job pretending to cry. That's more bad than anything else. He's rude about Hawaii, also.
He called it a paradise.
Sarcastically.
Failing trig, dragging various Walshes down with him. When you're done hanging out with him, your clothes will reek of smoke and cream soda.
Oh, God, yeah, that pool hall must have smelled so disgusting. That's a great point.
They really worked up a very convincing fug of like low-lying menthol smoke in there. That was very realistic. Good job.
Not having more than one usable eye roll take, the eye roll should be the thing that he does the best at this point.
And he needed to use his entire head. I'm so glad that you gift both of those.
I did.
Because he really was just like, he like had to take a running start at it. And, like, his shoulders moving, like,
you're right.
Okay.
Yep. All right, well, that's enough. that's plenty.
God, it's so much more than enough. Next time on Again With This, your mom's unauthorized. Tara and I will be taking on the Lifetime hit job on Shannen Doherty, I mean the unauthorized Bev Niner behind the scenes movie. So set those DVRs. It's on Saturday, 10-3, that's October 3rd, and one or more of us will be live tweeting it. So follow that previously.tv account at previouslytvnow.
Yes.
Follow our regular Twitter account at previouslytv. My esteemed co-host Tara at Tara Ariano, our wonderful producer Dave at Glark, and I'm at tomatonation.com. See you next time.
Hi, you know what to do after the beeparoni.
Hi.
God bless Lifetime. Can't wait for that movie.
Oh, boy.